Good morning and welcome to Nachyomi. We are going to be starting Sefer Hosea, and actually this begins the beginning of the Treasa, the 12 prophets. So let's just get a sense of what's actually going on over here. What are the Treasa, what are the 12 minor prophets, and what is going on in Hosea? So as a brief introduction to the Treasa, are essentially 12 books of prophets: Hosea, Yoel, Amos, Ovadiah, Yonah, Micha, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Those are the 12 prophets. They're all put into one section of Tanakh called the Treasar. What is the uniting principle of all of these 12 books? It is certainly not chronology in terms of one time frame, because we know that Hosea lives the times, as we're going to see, of Yeshayahu, and Haggai at the end, and Zechariah and Malachi live the times of Shivas Zion, which is the return to Zion, the return after the Babylonian Golos. So they're very, very far apart, almost 300 years in total apart from each other. So we're talking about a very long period of time. So what is the governing principle which unites? The Gemara in Bava Basra makes a very practical observation on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, that since they were all small and we didn't want to lose any of them, they were put into one sefer. As we know that Svarim in the times of Tanakh were not books and bound manuscripts, they were scrolls. And if you had a scroll of, let's say, for instance, Ovadia, which is simply one perek, or when you get to Yoel's four prokem, very short sefer, if those Svarim were left around, they could stand being lost or deteriorating faster than if they were as one longer sefer, and so they're practically put together. Sometimes you'll hear people calling these the minor prophets, the 12 minor prophets. The problem with that description is that it gives an indication that they are of a lesser magnitude spiritually than the other Nevi'im, and that's absolutely not true. In fact, they are sometimes some of these Nevi'im are more potent than Nevi'im Acharonim in terms of what they are saying, but it just means to say that the content of what was written down for the Doros, for the ages, is less than it was at than the other prophets at the times, let's say Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, who more of the Nevuos are recorded for the Doros. What about the order of the Treasar? What is the order in general? So the Gemara in Pesachim on Pei Zayin Amud Aleph tells us that four Nevi'im had Nevuah at one time, and they were all contemporaries: Hosea, Yeshayahu, Amos, and Micha. It's funny, when we learn Tanakh, we don't really get the sense of who lives with who and, you know, when each person was talking. We never really think about that. But we should really think about the difference in tone between Yeshayahu, Hosea, Amos, and Micha as we learn them, to get a sense of how they addressed the same generation differently. What are they focusing on? So in that respect, Rav Yehuda Kill, in his introduction to Sefer, the Treasar, he is one of the editors, one of the prime editors of the Mosad Hara Kuk publication called Dat Mikra on Tanakh, suggests that this can give us the brief basis for the order of the Treasar. First, it really should go Hosea and Amos, because they lived at the same time. But Yoel is inserted in between, because the closing chapter of Yoel has great similarities to the introduction of Amos. And actually, the first parak of Yoel is very similar to the end of Hosea as well. So it fits as a natural thematic movement in between. It's the natural hinge between the two Svarim. Micha should have gone right after Amos, because he also lived at the same time. But Ovadia and Yonah were inserted there. It seems that Ovadia's focus is solely on Edom, and that's the last parak of Amos, focuses on that. And which is in Amos parak 9, parak Tes. And also Yonah is inserted there because Micha prophesies about the destruction of the nation of Assyria in the north. And Yonah is the one who saves Nineveh in the north. So we're talking about, it makes most sense that Yonah's Nevuah, which is going to come much earlier, is going to be put before the destruction of Nineveh, which is described in Sefer Micha. Then we have Nahum and Habakkuk, who prophesied a little later during the times of Manasseh, the king in the south of Manasseh, and Zephaniah prophesied in the times of Yoshiah, according to the Midrash Seder Olam. So that was a natural progression chronologically. And then finally, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi came at the time of Shivas Zion, or return to Zion. So there is a general chronological progression, although there are thematic interruptions, as indicated. Now let's get to Hoshea himself. Who is Hoshea? What's going? When did he live? What is he talking about? So when did he live? We know that he certainly lived in the times of Bais Rishon, the first Bais HaMikdash, and it is pretty clear from the descriptions at the beginning of the Sefer that he lives at the time of four kings in the north, in the south, and they were Uzziah, who is Azariah, Yotam, Achaz, and Chizkiyahu. So we're going towards the end of the northern kingdom. The kings at the same time in the northern kingdom, in the kingdom of Israel, are Yerovam, who lived a very successful and long Yerovam ben Yoash, or called Yerovam the Second, who really lived a successful reign for 41 years. But after him is Zechariah his son, and then Shalom Menashe ben Gadi, Pekach ben Menachem, Pekach ben Remaliah, and Hoshea ben Ela. Those last succession of kings were essentially, there was no real succession there after Zechariah. It was basically kings being murdered by one another. No one ever succeeded the other in the lineage. It was rebellion after rebellion after rebellion as the northern kingdom of Israel fell. So it was a time of great success and prosperity, leading to a very sharp decline during this time. Where did he live? It's clear that Yehoshea lives in the northern kingdom. He doesn't mention Yerushalayim, and he actually refers to the north as Ephraim many times, or Beis Israel, leading some of them for him to indicate that he actually lived in Ephraim, which is the Harei Ephraim, the mountains just north of where Yerushalayim is now, which is the area of Ephraim. We don't know so much about him. We know that his father's name was Be'eri, and in fact, he's quoted in Yeshayahu. Be'eri is in a number of references, but the Midrash tells us that whenever a prophet is quoted and his father's name is put there as well in Tanakh, we know that his father was a prophet in his own right, so he certainly has spiritual lineage, but we don't know too much more about his family. What we do know is that the main focus of his prophecies really seems to be broken into two sections. There's 14 prokim in all, which will take us at the rate of 5 a week, will be taking us really just 2.5 weeks. So the first 3 prokim are the really disturbing story of Hoshea's illegitimate marriage and the nimshal of what that means, whether it was an image or whether it really happened. We're going to focus on that from Parakim Aleph to Gimel, and Parakim Dalad to Yud Dalad, the 4 to 14, will focus on his rebuke of Israel and the call for Tefillah Teshuvah. In fact, these are such disparate ideas that Rebbe in the Sifrei, in the Midrash HaLacha, in Perek Beis, says that these two sections are as far apart from each other as from east to west, and perhaps when they're put together, we get a general sense of contrast. We'll see the different themes, the different language used in them, the more poetic language used in the last prakim as opposed to the more the narrative aspect of the first 3. It seems to be that he's addressing a nation who is corrupt spiritually and morally. They don't believe in Hashem and they follow the indulgences. It will be interesting for us to contrast and to compare the words of Hoshea to his generation in the northern kingdom of Israel to the words of Amos, who will also be speaking to the northern kingdom of Israel. We're going to see that the tone of Hoshea's anger, there's going to be a tone of distress, of sharp rebuke, as opposed to Amos, who's going to be a lot cooler and in a certain sense more clinical, and in that respect actually more terrifying, because there seems to be less emotion in Amos than the heavy and strong emotion that we're going to be seeing in Hoshea. As opposed to Yeshayahu, both Hoshea and Amos are speaking to the northern kingdom, not the southern kingdom. So they are the colleagues, the northern colleagues of Yeshayahu, while Yeshayahu is speaking to the south, which has its own issues. Primarily, that's Yeshayahu's base of people. In the north, this is what is happening, Hoshea is speaking. The prokim are going to be much shorter than we've seen in Yechezkel, in Yirmiyahu, and so it's going to be a lot more self-contained. There is a little bit of a poetic nature to the later prokim, but we're going to deal with it one parak at a time and try to understand the context and the application of Hoshea's beautiful words. We'll also be seeing a number of haftorahs which appear in Sefer Hoshea, which perhaps we weren't aware of the context and background. And in Mitzvah Hashem, it'll be a beautiful limud. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.